to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello, Hope Picks, Action Jack. Sometime I'll be Mr. Matt Weber. We also have Mr. Brendan Carnano. We have Mr. Frank Fay, a full house this morning. Thank God, because voice is still a little conflicted, but not as bad as it was on Friday. We do heal, Matty, you know, at some point when you're old. You know, even when you're old, you heal a little bit. S&P futures down 7. We've got the Dow futures down 68. NASDAQ futures down 14, which is a lot better than earlier. Last night, we were down, down like 16 or 21. It was pretty nasty last night, so we're trying to come back a little bit, although Friday we had yet another wild day. We had a lot of trading here for my people, but I did a put roll twice in the same day. I don't think I've done that in ages in our XLE position. We're down 62 in the S&P on Friday. We're down 558 in the Dow, down 219 in the NASDAQ. So it was pretty brutal. Russell down 29, which is 2.5%. VIX 23, which is not huge, but it's indication that maybe this might continue a little bit. It's hard to tell. Frank, how are you?
Very good.
So you got the sine wave on Friday. You know, it's one of these things where once you get your first fill, if you catch it right, you actually could have a few more that day, it seems, when it's doing stuff like it did Friday.
Yeah, I hit it just right. I just happened to sell a future saying, okay, fine, I'm going to get rid of every last long. And went and did something else and was halfway watching, and it was like, holy cow. I mean, we're in a downward trend right now.
Yes, we are. And
short term.
I don't know that it's you continue having people come on, and we'll certainly ask Brendan if somebody doesn't watch it all day long. The first thing anybody does is says how fantastic the market is. Now people are buying Christmas gifts, and yet you look at investment is lower than people expected. You see things stopping all along the way here. And we've hit some kind of a wall. I don't know why we did. I couldn't have predicted it, but you have to be on your toes when you're doing the trade. We did a calendar spread in the XLE. That's put on kind of an addition to the position we have for the protected program in there. So the thing, we paid 28 cents for it, and which is a little much for us. But so my man JD says, you know, this thing's look like it's about 60. You know, and he goes, we only paid 28. What do you say? Yeah, well, if we get 60, let's just do it. We do it. The thing's up. Oil opened up real strong on Friday. I don't know if you saw that, Brendan, but it. So the XLE's way up. It's up like $2. I said, well, what puts we have? He goes, we got the 66.5. I said, you mean you already rolled them? Yeah, because we had the 64s. And all of a sudden, the thing starts falling apart. The spread we sold for 60 cents, I think it went out at 10 cents. And we ended up, when it goes below 65, I go, you know, get ready. You might be able to get back down to the 64s. We're rolling back down the same day. I don't think it's ever happened, Frank. You know, it's unbelievable. And
well, if you look at a year ago, I mean, we had no movement for quite a while. And so you put something on and hope you could take it off in a month. And all of a sudden, these time periods have gotten compressed. We moved as much on Friday as we did in months in the past year.
And if you anticipate what you're doing, you have to have your order in. You can't, mm-hmm. You can't wait to see it there and then put it in. But it's this is one of those situations where if you are protected, you're trading very well here. If you're not, you're not. Because you're looking at it going south, and you go, oh, my God, you sell something, and it turns around and goes the other way, and you buy something. And you want to be just on the opposite of that trade, Frank. And it's hard to do unless you're set up in advance to do it. Just, you know.
Oh, it becomes speculating.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this the past couple of weeks. You brought it up last Monday. Is it too late to protect a position or a portfolio? And the answer is no.
The answer is probably no.
The S&P is still up over 5% for 2018. So you can protect that 5%.
Well, we're having the going down narrow the same as we went up narrow. It's the FANGs. It's Boeing. Goldman Sachs is the one that's, well, same way. And for last year, wasn't it Boeing, Goldman Sachs where most of the, or was the year, it was the year before? Your first Trump, year Trump was in office. Where Boeing was going to put them out of business for charging too much and stock like doubled. Okay.
Well, wasn't that when he was trying to get them to lower the price on Air Force One?
Yeah.
Replacement planes?
Yeah, how'd that work out? We haven't heard that boo since then on that one. What, I was, you know, not get into the politics end of this because I like to talk markets when Frank's here, but by the way, I have a subject for you later, Brennan. Well, it's just us. About some guy who's a union head is getting this huge pension.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw that or not, but anyway, we'll talk about that later. But what? What do you think the politics is landing here, guys? I mean, one thing you can absolutely go squirrely is trying to figure out how much the political situation is affecting the market. I think this thing with this Huawei lady, I don't know whether you should do stuff like that or not. At some point, I think you do have to get personal when you think people are doing the bad things. But I have three concerns about it. One is when you're a president who seems to value these personal relationships. Don't worry, we hate China, but Z's a good guy, and he and I play golf together. How does the same guy go and steal somebody's daughter? it just seems to me like it doesn't match. I can't tell you whether it's right or wrong. I mean, I have no idea. But it seems like it's...
Pompeo said that Trump had no idea at all, which then harkens back to what Tillotson said about him, where he doesn't read, he's not involved.
He wants to read, he wants to know what he wants to know, and nothing else.
Well, if that means we have Bannon pulling stunts on his own, where can I get my Irish citizenship? I mean, for God's sake. I mean, the last thing you want is that guy pulling operational strings without telling anybody. In one man's opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. But I listened to a couple of guys on the weekend talking about how it was Cohen, and I mean, I'm thinking I can't get my finger on how much of Cohen's problems are his own or part of the campaign. Now, clearly, here's one. I very seldom get a serious premonition that's totally right, Brennan, but on the legal side. But this one, we talk about me nailing it to myself. The one time I can look in the mirror and say, self, you caught one right. Because, you know, very rarely can that happen on the market. But having been involved, being a cab driver and working across the street from Mike's Rainbow, where those guys used to hang out, and I used to, of course, BS with them, and whenever I caught a cab, it'd be one of the private guys around that area in work. I had a pretty good idea of the medallions and who owned them and who got them in the lottery and what all happened to them and how these Russian, I won't use the term mob, it's a Russian groups came in and accumulated a lot of these cab medallions.
Russian entrepreneurs?
Yeah. And as soon as I heard that Cohen had a lot of Chicago cab medallions, I got just immediately popped in the back of my head. It was like a snake sniveling in front of you, or slithering in front of you. But going, he's bleeped. He's bleeped. He got these things somehow from, I'm guessing, from doing some work for the Russians, and they gave him some cab medallions. And I bet he never paid taxes on any of this stuff. He's got five guys paying him cash or something, running around the city every day, paying $75 a day, or something along those lines. Sure enough, I bet they dug in there and found out the guy was a walking tax bomb with these things. I'm just guessing, but so I don't think any of that relates to Trump. But there were a couple of Democratic guys this weekend, which isn't to say, oh God, they're all liberals, but they said, you know, the stuff that Cohen did allegedly appears to be, you know, pretty much stone cold illegal, and that they're not going to impeach Trump. They have no intention to. And don't think it's a good idea. But the day he walks out of office, he's going to get arrested.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know what? I never dreamed that.
Well, Adam Schiff said that yesterday. I saw him on one of the news programs, and he said that you know, it's likely or possible that the day Trump leaves office, he's indicted.
For somebody who's supposed to know all this stuff, boy, I never even thought of that. They make me a big deal.
Well, here's the scenario, though. I heard last night on conservative talk radio is that a couple hours before he leaves office, he'll resign, Pence will take over, and Pence will pardon him. Because he can't pardon himself.
Well, he can try to pardon himself. He raised that argument. That argument was raised about a year ago, was when all the stuff really started to come out, a little bit about the special prosecutor. And there was discussion about whether he had the power to pardon himself. But that, what you're saying, I think has some credibility as a theory of what could happen.
What do you think the population thinks of that, would think of that?
Well, I don't think that Pence would have a chance in hell of getting reelected.
Well, it would already be way after that. It would be
No. Well, I guess under Frank's scenario, if it was just a few hours before Trump leaves office, that's right, it would be after the election.
Yeah, but you're assuming that Pence would be... Let's assume a Democrat wins next time, although I wouldn't assume that, either this time or next time. Why would you assume that, that Pence wouldn't be, Woodward would not be the next guy?
Well, if Trump loses in 2020,
yeah,
then the Democrat would not take over, the new president would not take over until January. So on January 2nd, Trump could resign. Pence is elevated to the office of the presidency for the remainder of the term. And in that scenario, he could pardon Trump.
Okay.
And he could reuse Gerry Ford's speech from when he pardoned Nixon for the good of the country.
Yeah. But then the other interesting question comes in is whether or not that would impact any state law violations that might be discovered in the state of New York.
Will he leave the country and never come back?
Trump?
Would he be that lucky?
You mean go to Scotland?
Yeah.
I don't think that would happen.
I wonder, is that affecting what's happening? I have this horrible feeling that some of the stuff that, well, to be honest, Frank and I and a few of the rest of us, from the finance side, Brennan, have been talking about for a long time, that we never really trusted the rally because it was all built on debt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, no one's talking about the debt right now. No one's talking about the lesser than expected impact of the tax bill last year. No one's talking about the fact that the trade deficit is growing, not shrinking, in light of all the tariff action.
Well, yeah, and I'm not so sure. The current account, just what I'm talking about, is if you have a trade deficit, for instance, with Canada, say it's $20 million, but if people in Toronto go to New York and go to Disney World and spend $200 million, you're even.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm not saying it's happening with China, but all right, Brian. I asked Lou on Thursday, but I was coughing so darn much I barely heard him talk back. What exactly, when you pull out of an agreement, say with Iran, like we did? I don't think Frank was China ever part of that. I don't think so.
I don't know.
I'm going to say no. But if you pull out of the state, there's 10 countries involved.
Mm-hmm.
You pull out. You're outraged. You pull out. Trump pulls us out. So we're no longer in there. And there were things in there that we were going to allow people to... essentially, they were going to start buying stuff from here. And we had people that were upgrading, the Iranian air traffic system. And we had people doing the towers. We had Boeing able to sell planes. It was Obama's gift to big companies, like Trump has done four or five times since he's been in there already, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden you get pissed off and you pull out. So what exactly... Now, Kevin was saying on Friday that when you... This is new with Homeland Security. And now if you sell something overseas, say you sell, some of the real high-end Dell servers, or I don't know, the high-end IBM servers to somebody in Britain... Even though they're still, I guess you'd almost have to now. That as part of that contract, you say or are required to say you can't send these things onward to, these five places. How do you get the right to do that, and how does it become a criminal offense if somebody doesn't?
Well, I'm not sure that it is a criminal offense. I don't think that any of these countries that trade with Iran in violation of the sanctions the U.S. imposed can be charged criminally. It's on the business level as to how the United States is going to punish them by not allowing them to do business with U.S. banks or use a monetary system. But, your other question, how do you withdraw from that? All of those agreements, all those multinational agreements have provisions in them as to how they can break the agreement or how they can depart the agreement. If a country tries to do that unilaterally, the agreement is no longer valid unless they go through those procedures. And if they try to do it just unilaterally, then the other countries can either say, well, the whole deal is off, or we're going to continue as if you're in and just continue on accordingly.
Well, I mean, because if Britain, for instance, is still in, and they, part of their deal was they're going to sell servers to Iran, and now it's illegal for you to sell servers to Britain? I mean,
they can't use the banking system to exchange the money for that.
Well, Iran's not in the banking system anyway.
Hmm?
Iran's not in the banking system anyway.
No, but Britain is. They would sanction Britain for using the U.S. monetary funds, the banking system, not necessarily in connection with that transaction, but the punishment for the United States would be not to allow Britain access to the U.S. monetary system.
Well, I don't know, but that's a huge sledgehammer approach.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly what they're trying to do.
Well, I guess,
it's like using a sledgehammer to kill an ant.
Well, this is like trying to design a nuclear submarine on a radio, but it seems like we're taking very simpleton type approaches to very complicated things.
Yes.
Is that to me has been one of the amazing stalwarts of this administration.
Well, he tries to make everything very, very simple that a third grader could understand. And it's much more complicated than that. You can't just unilaterally join or disconnect from multinational agreements. And that's what his advisors have been telling him since he's been in office, that you can't just unilaterally do this, that there are ramifications to the world and to the U.S. positions around the world if you try to do this. Getting into the new NAFTA, for example, requires the consent of Congress. He can't do this unilaterally, no matter how much posturing he says about how much great he's doing for the U.S. economy by the new NAFTA and how this is now the greatest thing since sliced bread. Until it gets approved by Congress, it doesn't matter what's in that agreement. It's not effective.
Well, when you have a country that appears to me, and I'm part of it too, I should be up on this stuff, it seems like we all need to take a refresher civics class. The last thing you need is a president that basically tells people everything wrong about the way things are governing here. Now, what about Boeing? They were supposed to be sell Iran. They're still flying 707s over there, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Boeing was some massive deal. Is that deal all off?
Well, that's what Trump was trying to do. If there's any, I don't know the details of that, so I really can't speak to that as to what's going on with Boeing.
All right. So I guess my question is, all right. So Boeing's out. Let's say, but where do you have the right? Since everybody else signed this thing, I'm going to say in good faith, to say Airbus can't sell them jets.
Well, that's right. And, depending on where Airbus runs the same risk. If the U.S. unilaterally says, we will not allow Airbus to use the banking system right now to conduct any of its business, that's a sanction against Airbus or any countries that allow dealings with Iran. That's the hammer they're trying to impose. And that's why Iran is being isolated. Same thing like they try to do with North Korea, by isolating them so that they cannot trade using international monetary funds.
I guess I want to ask...
Excuse me. China is part of the Iran nuclear deal.
Okay. Right, so that, I mean,
but any of those countries have the right to thumb their noses at the U.S. and do that. And the risk they take, they could call the bluff of Trump and the Americans and say, what are you really going to do? Are you going to isolate yourself? Yes, you're the biggest economy, but if the rest of the world gangs up against you and takes a position against you, that's a risk we're willing to take.
Well, if you pull those 10 nations out of the World Monetary Fund, there is no World Monetary Fund.
Exactly. It's a stalemate.
But then the U.S. will give exemptions for Iranian oil.
They already have.
Countries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, they already have.
I mean, it's inconsistent.
Yep. Don't bother me with the facts.
Well, I mean, it's but the problem is a lot of people are zeroing in on that and don't want to be bothered, but there's more to this than... You know, the weird part is that I was reading something this weekend about we're being turned into a banana republic, and you know, people laugh at that, and they say, why would you... I was, for a period of a few months, just to see what the creatures I would run into, some of the stupid things they do, I was trying to sell some of those, broker, and inhabiting, broker some of these, what do they call them, old bearer bonds in these countries, Brennan?
Mm-hmm.
The Germans have, bonds that they sold during the Depression, and, you know, the Mexicans have bonds from Santa Ana sold. And it's, they're out there. But the idea being is, that's not our obligation. That was the Banana Republic leader before me. You know, now we have a president that basically says, that's not America's obligation. That was the president before me.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what, you know what I wish? Honestly? Boy, here's something. I wish we could get rid of him as a president and put him in as mayor of Chicago for about a month. We'll get rid of the parking deal. We'll get rid of the Skyway deal. We'll get rid of the Millennium Park deal. Because those are horrible deals made by the guy before you. If you could just unilaterally do that, I want him here. If you can do that. I mean,
yeah, but he can't do that. They can't do that.
If you can do it in Washington, around the world, why can't you do it in Chicago?
That's my point. You can't do that. He can't do this unilaterally. He thinks he can. He's getting to his base by saying he can, but he cannot. He does not have that authority.
He thinks he does.
I know he thinks he does, but he does not.
Right. SP Futures down 7. Be right back. Thanks for Jax.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Brendan Carnahan, Mr. Frank Fahey, Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures down 975, Dow futures down 90. Sounds bad, but about half as far as we were last night. NASDAQ futures down 23. Still on top of the 500 and some points on Friday. It's still pretty miserable. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei down 459. Yes, 459. It's 2.1%, 21,219. Shanghai down 21, it's 0.8%. Hang Seng down 311, it's 1.2. Hang Seng market's getting hammered because even worse than everybody else, there's rumors afoot that their independence is being threatened by the mainland. I don't know if that's true or not, but that would not be good. Plus, China had incredibly weak trade data. They were looking for a 10% raise, and they end up with a 5 or 6% raise. So the bad numbers over the weekend on top of everything else they obviously did not need. Oil down 71 cents, 51.90. Brent down 57 cents. So oil has become very volatile as well. Natural gas, 4.51. RBOB 146. How is it that the gas in my station, Homer Glen, was $1.91 last week and $2.23 this week, and RBOB hasn't even moved? There must be some weird stuff going on in the distribution system.
I thought that there was supposed to be an oil glut now.
Well, yeah, there is. It's not always down that much, but yeah, there is, basically.
So why is the price going up by...
Well, I don't know. Why 191 was an outlier, though.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened that weekend, where they dropped 30 cents and then they went right back up. That's really strange. Gold unchanged, silver down 8 cents. Many got forced traffic, weather, forced sports. Where's my Super Bowl tickets?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a pretty good start here on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways on a Monday morning, but traffic building on the Edens and Kennedy. Same with the Eisenhower and Stevenson specifically. Southside expressways are looking pretty good. It looks like we have an incident, though, at 111th and Doty. There is a level one hazmat fuel spill at 111th and Doty that is causing issues on the south side. It looks like just west of there, Central Avenue between 95th and Southwest Highway, is reduced to one lane due to a water main break that happened earlier this morning, so that's causing some issues as well. But no accidents to report in the area, so enjoy a nice quiet start to your morning. Weather today, we actually warm up a little bit later on this afternoon. Lots of sunshine today, a high of 34. Right now it is mostly clear and 21 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 72 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 45. In sports, as Chief mentioned, the Bears now 9-4 on the season, two games up on the Vikings, who play tonight in Seattle, as they took it to the Rams from the defensive side of the ball specifically. 15-6 was the final. They shut the Rams out in the second half and didn't allow the Rams to score a single touchdown. First time that's happened all season. Rams were averaging 35 points per game, and they were held to just 6 last night at Soldier Field. Mitch Trubisky was not very good. He threw for a touchdown, but also threw three interceptions and was inaccurate the whole night. But Jared Goff of the Rams, 4 picks and couldn't get anything going. He had just a 19 QB rating, and Mitch's was 33. Both had a night that they would like to forget. I think the difference was Jordan Howard rushed 19 times for 101 yards while Todd Gurley couldn't get anything going. Bears defense had 4 interceptions, 3 sacks, and a safety, as they're now 9-4. Cardinals lost to the Lions 17-3. In hockey, Blackhawks have dropped 7 straight. They lost to Montreal 3-2. And Harold Baines and Lee Smith, a couple of former Chicago baseball stars, will now be in the Hall of Fame. Baines for the White Sox, Lee Smith for the Cubs.
Yeah, that was pretty big news with Baines and Smith getting in.
Man, who were the other I saw them last night. I was going to send them to myself, but I didn't. Who were the other 8 guys? All of them seemed pretty deserving to me.
I know Lou Piniella was one of them, and he missed it.
He just missed.
George Steinbrenner missed. I know he was one of them. I'd have to pull up the whole list, though.
Yeah, the other players were pretty good, too. I mean, I would probably have taken a couple of those over Harold Baines, to be honest with you.
Baines has no business being in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, Joe Carter.
Yeah, Joe Carter, I think, was in the list, too. Yeah.
How does Baines make it in that Carter?
Yeah. Joe Carter doesn't compare that much better to Baines.
Nope.
I don't think Joe Carter is a Hall of Famer either, but Baines definitely
should have been. He had 100 RBIs for 10 years in a row. Who's done that ever? Other than, like, Lou Gehrig or somebody. That's pretty good.
It is, but Joe Carter I don't think is a Hall of Famer. Harold Baines absolutely should not have been in the Hall of Fame. I mean, he doesn't compare favorably in any measurable statistic.
Right, and a lot of his hits were as a DH. After his knees were shot, he just could not play the field at all.
Right. Very good player and played 22 years. And
that's where he got so many of his hits and RBIs because of the longevity.
Exactly, and like you said, he went to the DH and it was perfect for him because he could always hit. But yeah, I mean, he had a career WAR of 40, which, you know, the average Hall of Famer has a career WAR of 73. He's about half as good as the average Hall of Famer for a right fielder.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're starting to see some weird stuff, in my opinion. You're starting to lose consistency.
Lee Smith, though, I think absolutely deserves
it. Okay. You're starting to lose some consistency in the voting when you have, like I said, Joe Carter for a 10-year span was 100 RBIs, which is, I mean, that is exceptional. You look at even the guy on the Sox, who nobody would consider him Hall of Fame material, but all these other stars we supposedly have, with all the platoon baseball and everything that you have, and I'm not saying I'm against it, but you're setting people up to essentially succeed, which is fine, by the way, but it's also different.
Who are you referring to on the Sox?
Well, Abreu, since the day he broke into Major League Baseball, has got more hits than like anybody else but like one other guy. Because the dude basically plays every day.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple times he's been hurt. But I don't see how you compare that to a guy who, he can't hit this pitcher, we'll sit him that day type of thing. I'm not, and again, from the managerial side and the statistics side, I don't want to get an argument with Mr. Weber, but there's a difference between a Joe Carter who every single day for 10 years batted basically against everybody and still managed to produce those kinds of numbers versus other guys that they play 120 games. They play. I mean, how good a player could, you know, Billy Williams have been if the 4 pitchers he couldn't hit, he never had hit against? You know, I mean, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying it's different. And there needs to be some sign of a reward, I think, for those people who maybe we used to think were mid-range. And I, for one, think a guy like Mark Grace, but he had more hits in a decade than anybody else in baseball. And by the way, he had four or five gold gloves along the way. To me, there's a guy who plays every single day. There needs to be somewhat of a reward for that you're not seeing today. I mean, because now, you know, the platoon baseball, I'm saying it's just different. Because those guys were never hidden from anybody. Nobody agrees with anything I'm saying here.
No, I understand your point, but I still think whether you're playing every day, certainly things like how many hits you get shows up, because if you get more at bats, you're going to, even if your batting average is lower, because you've got a number of bats, you're going to have more hits than somebody who plays half the games or two-thirds of the games. But I don't know that you should really, I think the standards do shift a little bit. But for example, the guys who were up for this, for the committee yesterday were all of the same era. And they're not being measured by the standards of the guy who retired 5 years ago.
Okay.
So I think that your point is being taken into account when you're looking at who's up for election to the Hall of Fame now.
Well, that's my point. I'm saying in that particular era, Joe Carter would have been one of my top five picks as a player.
Lou Piniella missed by one vote, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Was he?
He was being elected as a manager, though, right? Not as a player.
I think as a manager, yeah.
Yeah.
Why the hell would he not? What do you got to do to be a manager to do much better than he did?
Won a World Series with the Reds. He had the best regular season record of all time with the Mariners. He took the Cubs to the playoffs twice.
Mm-hmm.
He managed the Yankees. I mean,
he did a lot.
Pretty good, yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is if you start doing those sorts of things, those kinds of people, is this the way to get the steroid people in?
Define right people.
Well, what I'm saying is this: if you take the 80s, for instance, and you say it was the steroid era, or when would you say it was the steroid in the 90s?
Steroid was in the 90s, okay, and early 2000s.
Does that mean that there's a separate spot for the 90s people?
That's a good question. By the way, the other guys that were on the list besides Smith, Baines, and Piniella were Albert Bell, Joe Carter, Will Clark, Oral Hershiser, Charlie Manuel, and George Steinbrenner.
So each one of those guys...
Albert Bell was better than Baines.
Yeah, he was.
But he was a big-time steroid guy.
Yep.
I'm surprised Oral Hershiser didn't get in being an announcer and everything.
Well, I heard... there was an article in the trivia say that Reinsdorf really lobbied hard for Baines. And Baines just barely got in. He had the minimum 12 votes.
Well, it's possible. I got to believe that Greg Maddux was one of the reasons that Lee Smith finally got in.
Mm-hmm.
How does Lee Smith only get 50% of the writer's vote in his best year?
When he was pitching, he was one of the top pitchers in baseball for years and years and years. And when he left, I think he was the major league save leader
for
when
like
he retired.
A couple of decades before somebody passed it.
Yeah, and now, isn't he third now, Maddie?
I think he's third.
I'd have to pull it up. Yeah.
I think he's third.
I think he's third. He's behind Trevor Hoffman and Mariano Rivera.
Who are the relievers that are in? There's only like, you can count them on one hand, right?
Yeah, Raleigh Fingers, Bruce Sutter.
Bruce Sutter finally made it in, yeah.
That might be it, and that may be it.
Is Sutton in?
Well, he wasn't a reliever.
No, he wasn't a reliever. But none of the old guys that are in, yeah. Elroy Face or... those people, because I mean, in those days, you became a reliever when you stopped starting.
Yeah, and I don't. Dennis Eckersley in? But he was both a starter and a reliever.
I think
most of his fame would have been as a reliever.
I could say something nasty on a Monday, but I won't. Because he drank too much.
I have a great Dennis Eckersley story, which I
he admits
say
that
for a later time.
Well, I mean, the before. Before stopping the booze and the after is two different people.
That's right. And when he stopped drinking is when he became a reliever for the Oakland A's.
Well, because of a starter.
I was once out with him at 4:30 in the morning on a day. He and Mike Torres on a day that Torres was supposed to pitch at 11 o'clock.
Really?
Like 80 or 81.
What's
81.
What city was this?
Chicago.
That'd be Chicago. The only place at 4:30 bars. Wow.
I was there. No, we weren't. It's a longer story. I don't know
if the
statute of limitations is really up on this.
I have a feeling Dennis did
it
pretty
well.
It depends
on what it was that you did.
you're right, by the way, Brendan. Lee Smith is third. That's Rivera 1, Hoffman 2, Smith 3, Francisco Rodriguez 4. And John Franco, 5.
Mm-hmm.
Top 5. Eckersley is 7th in saves all time.
Yeah, and he didn't pitch as a closer all that long. I mean, relatively speaking to his career, because he was a starter for a long period of time.
Well, he was one of the few guys that had a great, good relievers, either strikeout guys or or contact guys, and he was both,
mm-hmm.
which is somewhat rare, right, Manny? I mean, it,
absolutely, yeah.
All right, I got a question here. We wonder why the world is in turmoil. See what's going on in France. Why is it that whenever you see these sort of, I want to say, worldwide economics issues, which we've had in the last 9 years, and when you pump money into the system and pump things up like we've done, pump you up, what was that guy? He's not on commercials anymore. Where they did that, Eckersley, not Eckersley, Rogers did all commercials, going to pump you up. That guy's been nowhere to be found. Anyway, you pump this stuff up, and people make money and other people don't. Prices go to the moon. Well, I heard yesterday that the, speaking of which, stuff that we don't even count, Audrey was telling me the price for that DocuSign, which became a huge thing. We don't have to get signed contracts for real estate. You can sign everything on the online.
Mm-hmm.
But they really have no competitor. Now the price went up like 40% 1 year or something. I mean, this kind of stuff is insidious. We allow nothing but monopolies, and then we let everybody raise all the prices. We don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't pick them up. It's so anywho. But why is it now we have a Europe's top court confirms that the UK can stop the Brexit if they want after it was voted in? How can you do that?
I didn't see that, and I don't know the rationale.
What? It's no surprise to me that people in the world are pissed off at their governments. I mean, am I right or wrong? I mean, Trump's not a surprise to me that he's there. I wish he was doing a better job, but he's not. But I don't. I mean, people are miffed. People are absolutely miffed. We have a thing we're going to talk about a little bit later with Brendan regarding some guy in the state of Illinois. And I'm going to find the article that is getting paid $200,000+ a pension. And the most he ever made was $65,000 as a
56. If it's a guy I'm thinking of, he made $56,000 for the city of Chicago.
Yeah. And because and the judges, our idiot judges, have taken it to the extreme that even if you frauded the system and you got away with it, that it's okay.
All right, but his argument is that he did not defraud the system because it was permissible under state law that he could do what he did by counting his years and his salary as a union official towards his pension. Those are the requirements that are in there. But again,
the fraud was in putting him back on the payroll for 1 day.
Well, that got him qualified for the hire bet, but that was still permissible under the law.
But you're not. Nobody hires somebody for a day. It doesn't pass a smell test.
Right. Well, the smell test is different than whether it's legally permissible, and that's part of the challenge, and that's part of the idiocy of the pension laws about the no diminution laws provisions of the Constitution that you can't do anything. I mean, that's purely gaming the system, and Illinois is replete with school superintendents around the state as well as pension officers gaming the system that way. You're exactly right, and that's kind of a thing that's going to lead to a revolt. I agree with you.
Well, what I have the same discussion, and I know you're not arguing to be arguing, but I have the same discussion with Dr. J all the time regarding the overseas, the money that was overseas. Now, it's in there. It's legal. You can do it. And I'd say, okay, John, you show me the line in the tax code that says you can take all your income in Amsterdam because you run your coffee beans through a reseller in Amsterdam, and all your Starbucks facilities are in London. You can tell me that your income's in Amsterdam, even though you're selling all the crap in London. Where does it say that in a tax code? I guarantee it doesn't say it. That somebody somewhere got somebody to agree to this or somebody to that, and I don't know if it's precedent or whatever it is, somebody who got a job at Starbucks after he made the ruling or something, who the hell knows. But, I mean, those aren't... It can't say that anywhere, Brendan, that for the purpose of raising your income, you can be put back, that somebody can sign off on an employment form knowing that you're going to be there for 1 day and resign. Nobody would do that. It can't be written anywhere.
No, it's not. But it's not written that says, I can hire the chief for 1 day and boost his pension by triple from what he would have gotten without that 1 day. But there are, the way that the rules are, and I can't point
to... Well, Mayor Daley was hired for a day.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
There were a lot of people who were hired for short term.
But
or
you
who
even
didn't
show up for work? I mean, what did you do that day? Did you even have a job? Did you show up? But the thing's a total chicanery.
Wasn't he a teacher or something like that to get into the system?
Oh, Daly, I thought he was back with the attorney's office. I thought. I'm not sure.
No. I think that. But whatever the details were with him, the way that it's designed, it doesn't say we can hire you for one day and you qualify, but it's an accumulation of the time that you've got. And in order to qualify, and sometimes they discover that they're a couple of days short or a couple of months short, and they'll be hired to cover that gap period in order to qualify for the rules and regulations that are in place. It does not pass the smell test, but whether it's legal or not is a different question. And that's one of the things that irks me considerably, continuously, when you have people who are challenged, whether it's hedge fund advisors or politicians or people getting a pension in Illinois that says, well, what I did was legal. It's within the four corners of the law. Well, yeah, but if you're the guys writing, or if your buddies are the guys writing it, and they'll have your situation covered, then while it may be in the law, you benefited from a scam. You game the system.
And there's a lot of inconsistencies in this world.
That's the white man's purview in our country.
Yeah. Well,
let me give you an example. In 1986, in the tax code, when that was revised, there's a provision for certain types of bonds that are issued around the country called industrial development bonds. And every state is limited to the amount that they can issue per year. It's a per capita amount of bonds that can be issued. And it's given to the states, so the states can allocate among themselves. But there is a provision there that says it goes to the state level in all states except for those states which had a constitutional convention in 1970 and allows for home rule units. Guess how many there are in the country?
One?
Yeah, and guess which one it is?
Gotta be us.
And guess who was the chairman of the Means and Ways Committee when they adopted that?
Rasty.
Right. All right, so you look at that, and on its face, a court would say, well, this theoretically could apply to all 50 states if this were the case, but it's written in such a way that it really applies to only one. And yet, it's legal, and that's why Chicago has the benefit of doing its own volume cap for this as a home rule unit. And if you go across the border to Indiana or you go up to Wisconsin, Madison can't do that, and Indianapolis can't do that, but Chicago and other home rule cities in the state of Illinois can.
Well, the Chicago River is the only one that doesn't have to have plants to get rid of the bacteria before you put discharge water in there, because in the Clean Air and Water Act, it was defined as a drainage canal and not a river. I can't believe you guys don't know.
So the point is that when you're the one who's writing the law or has input on how the law is written, you can build in exceptions that are drafted in a way that make it look like it applies universally so long as you meet these conditions, but you know that there are only X number of people who can qualify for those exemptions or corporations that can qualify for those exemptions.
Well, you look at, let's say, one of our team, Mr. Matty Weber, who's convinced he's a little kind of a liberal dude once in a while, and he wants to do this single-payer system for health care. And I'm not saying it's wrong, but my question is, I know we're not like Mexico. Well, maybe we are in some ways. Why is it that's like the people in Sweden and the people in Denmark, I think. I've only been to Denmark once. I've never been to Sweden. Why isn't it doesn't appear to me that when those guys have some kind of a single payer health care or your college education is quote included with your taxes, everybody there doesn't spend their entire day finding a way to steal from the system. We could never do that here. But why is it that we've supposedly been at war now since 9/11, and yet the biggest game in the country is still stealing money from the federal government? Shouldn't that be like treason or something? I mean, when the most interesting part, I'm going to try and read some of it. I'll never get to read all of it. But when Mueller comes out with his report, which is going to be, 90 million pages long, it's going to be the incredible crap that's going on between countries and people stealing stuff back and forth, and now the same guy who managed to be the consultant for that loser who was the head of Ukraine stealing the people's money there was also a consultant here, was also getting money from Britain, was also getting money, that this incredible stuff in the middle, and we seem to have, our politicians are just taken by these fools without any sort of, God, you were that stupid, you were politics, you know, 90 days in jail or something. I mean, there's no tit for tat for the parking meter stuff. There's no tit for tat for the Skyway. There's nothing on any of these guys. I mean, we're talking about Rumsfeld. He was totally hornswoggled by this buffoon from Iraq that talked him into going to war over there. He was going to be the president, and the guy is gone. We paid that guy for that advice.
Mm-hmm.
And every time you go on a lakefront, you go, well, more war walking down running, you see people running along with no legs.
Mm-hmm.
Because of this idiot. You meanwhile, Rumsfeld is a respected man, so is Cheney. They're all sitting there in the front pew of the Bush's thing, and this guy got his money, and people got no legs, or don't have a life. I mean, we have no ability, it appears, to look back at any of this stuff and see the people that line their pocket and do something to them when other people got hurt by it.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know what? It's coming down worldwide right now, I think. I
mean, it's been for a long time. We have a selective memory, Tom.
Well, it's true.
Nobody brought up the Balkans and the first President Bush. We basically green-lighted the Serbians to go after everybody.
Well, that's true. Hey, Frank, while you're still here, are we going to calm down at all this week, or we can't be going to get too wilder? Well, I guess we could always get wilder, but what do you think?
I think we trade the moves, meaning short-term trades, like you talk. You do something, you have a strong stop, and you put in the closing order. I'm doing single-day trades right now.
But hardest question in all of advising people. You got a would-be client or client comes in the door. Oh, yeah, well, I got $1 million in XYZ's fund. Now I got 900. What do I do? What do you tell them?
I would tell them to protect it right now. How long have you had it?
Yeah.
And do you want to protect those gains? Because if he has 900, he probably had 600 3 years ago.
What is your... okay, but that's your money still. What do you tell a guy in a 401k? That's still your money, the $300 you made.
If it goes down, it's not your money.
Well, that's right.
You want to keep that money that you made.
What do you tell a guy in a 401k?
It's chaotic right now. You know, take a break from the chaos.
Well, I'm asking you these questions, and I don't want to answer them. What do you tell a guy with
a taxable event with protection?
What do you do with a 401k where your only choice is in or out? That's a tough one.
I'd take some of it off.
I think
table.
It depends how old you are.
I think it does too. Depends on the person. SP futures up 8 7. Down, I'm sorry, down 8.75. Dow futures down 8.6. Frank, thank you very much, buddy. NASDAQ futures down 22. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Long on base. Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Hollister, Brendan Cornan, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Wow, S&P futures up a buck, Brendan. Dow futures up 2. NASDAQ futures up 12. We've made it to the promised land. We've been back 20 points, and we'll see. Boy, it's every day, any kind of sniffing up day has been a sell. We'll see if that... Why do you think the world is appearing to look at this Brexit deal falling apart as a positive?
I'm not sure they are looking at it as a positive.
Well, the sterling is down a bunch, but some people, it's kind of a, I don't know that, I guess we can feel the same way here, but the, there's a real issue. We had some people on, Matty, who's the guy we had from, God, was he an old sourpuss? Who's the guy that we had on from, was he Sweden? The guy who was, one of the EU commissioners?
Yeah, I don't remember his name, but we did have a guy on that, and he was from Sweden.
And he was just totally miffed at the government in Britain for not explaining it to their people properly. How good they had it because they had guys like him making rules for them in Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
And you almost wonder, Brendan, if the governments... I'm not a revolutionary at heart. Well, maybe I am, I guess, but probably not. I see every place now, the government's the problem in some of these areas. I mean, if these guys turn around and say that they're not going to Brexit after that vote, that's not the Britain I know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, clearly in Chicago, it's city employees versus other people to me. I mean, not individually, like you don't like the person you do, but I mean, it's really us versus them. I get this. I have it. I voted for it. I snuck it by and it's mine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, other people are just supposed to keep paying.
Yeah.
And, this thing in France, this is serious shit, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the protests in France are really spreading in a very dangerous way, and you wonder what the impact is going to be on the country and their economy.
Well, we're ignoring the Italian problems, which have not gone away money-wise. South America has been in worse shape since the 20s, for God's sake. I mean the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not... I mean, there's reasons why world markets are having problems,
mm-hmm.
I think. Now, as to what reason it is, who knows? I mean, I don't. But you wonder, for a long time, it seems like you can have two different worlds, the market, then the rest of the world, and then, why did, in the 20s, did you have a agricultural revolution that was, or a depression that was 10 years in the making before it ever came anywhere near, Wall Street, and then all of a sudden it did? I mean, it always intrigues me is how this stuff can be kind of be there to be seen, and all of a sudden one day it makes a difference. And you wonder why that day is that day. I mean, you see what's going on in the market here. I mean, we're at a 10% correction now, which is, it's a big deal if you bought the top for sure. Certainly if you bought it on margin. But it's not really a big deal if you've been in the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'd like to not give any of it back. But, if you bought in 2009, you can't really panic here, I don't think. But you wonder, when does it all of a sudden make a difference, Brennan? When does... the stuff going on in Ukraine, when does that become front page news versus fifth page news? I mean, with the flow of information, and then you've got everybody just watching people's tweets. Nobody reads the big articles anymore. There's something weird here, but what people focus on and don't. And I don't know that it's all that healthy, but I don't know what you do about it.
I agree.
I'm saying a bunch of different stuff, but what is causing... I mean, I'm in the business of trying to advise people what they should be doing with their stocks and bonds and so forth right now, and it's the answers are not all that obvious. It's a tough conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly a tough conversation if you're looking for certainty. But
I mean, all you got to do is say, I think the market's not only should you not get out, you should put more in because around 10%, and guess what? The more you put in, buy an old blah, blah, blah. Well, what if it's, 2028, and the S&P futures are 2,500.
Mm-hmm.
We're 26, 27 today. That could happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened, two other decades in my investment experience. You don't want it to, but the idea that people posture themselves that they know. But then when you talk about insurance, it's the same thing you do with your car insurance. Every day you buy insurance and don't crack up your car or don't drive, you're basically pissing away money.
Right. So I'm not following where you're going with this. Sorry.
I'm saying the point is there is no answer.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point, that the advice is chaotic, and what's going on around us now is a little chaotic. And to grab some certainty in terms of what you're trying to accomplish, you're right, does come into how old are you? What are you doing? What are your investment goals? What is your age? How much do you have involved? Those kinds of things. Are you on margin? Are you not on margin? I mean, there's a million different questions to ask people. It's not just the one word answer, I guess is where I'm going with this.
Mm-hmm.
Because all I do is explain all the stuff that's going on, and guess what? You get confused because it's confusing.
Okay, but I'm still not following how this got from Brexit.
Well, we're doing it. How do you make a call if you're investing in the UK market today?
Mm-hmm.
Do you pull your money out? Do you say we're not going to do Brexit? Put your money all your money in, margin and buy more,
or the EU itself?
Yeah, right. I don't even know whether in or out is positive or negative.
Well, how do you ever know?
Well,
you use the best judgment you have based on your experience and what risk you're willing to take in the future.
All right, I'll explain the difference between your mentality and mine on this. Me being a trader and you being an attorney, I should have been an attorney, not a trader, probably. But you have a sizable, I won't say fat, 401k, but a nice one. And you view a move, okay, as something. You know, should I get out or should I put more in? But it's like Milton Friedman used to call it stock and flow theory. Where I look at your portfolio and the fact that you have money in there and are still contributing, in my mind, you are not only bullish the market, but really bullish because you're buying more this week.
Mm-hmm.
You don't look at it that way. You look at it, I'm in a program, what are you talking about? This is what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, from my point of view, you're making a huge statement. You got $1 million in the market and you bought more. I'll use that number out there. To me, if I looked at your stuff, I'd say, God, this Brendan guy is ravingly bullish. He's not making any move to get out. Oh, by the way, he's buying more.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying people are locked in. You can have these conversations with people all day long that don't really have an opinion or don't. If I just gave you a pile of cash today.
But doesn't that also go to the question about whether you're looking at long term or short term? If you're trying to.
No, those are all excuses.
Okay.
Well, I'm not being dogmatic. I'm saying if I gave you, say I don't know, I have no idea what your 401k is, but let's pick $1 million because I think you're wealthy. If I gave you $1 million, just pile it up on the desk in front of the mic, and said you don't have a 401k, would you put all of it in there today?
Probably not. Probably not the whole thing. I'd split it up into some other investments.
Okay. You might even put some under a mattress for a week.
Yeah.
So I'm saying is, my point is people are being driven, their philosophy right now, and the people I talk to that are worried about the market, there's this momentum to the strategy they had yesterday,
mm-hmm.
or last week, or last month, or last year, or the last 10 years that worked very well for them. The difference between me and any of those people is, I'm a trader, I look at my position every day, and that's one I just landed with the day before. Mm-hmm. That's what people did to me. What do I want, and how do I get there from here? I have no affinity whatsoever to my current position.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes me difficult to talk to. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
But it's just that I understand you and the collective retail people point of view, because that's what I do for a living, but they don't necessarily, what do you mean? It's what I've done for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So what? You know, I always cut my grass that way. Okay. It doesn't mean it's the best way to cut your grass the next time, right?
Right. But then you have the right to go the opposite way. Instead of going horizontal on your lawn, you can go vertical the
right.
next day just to experiment. And you can do the same thing with your investments. So you can, if out of that $1 million pot that's on the table, you know, you could put all $1 million into a 401k, or you can take a $500,000 of it and go to Vegas and see what you're going to do on the crap table.
Well, that would be investing too.
Yeah.
Depending on how you want them.
That's kind of a short-term investment strategy that you're going to win or lose, and you know pretty quickly.
I guess what I'm saying is I'd like to get people, when I go to breakfast or lunch or something with a prospective new client or even an old client, I try and break through what they're really looking for in their current portfolio. Does it look like it does because of momentum? Does it look like it does because of laziness? Does it look like I just ignore it? I've had people have had 20,000 shares of Exxon stock. Well, do you like Exxon stock? Not really. Okay. Why do you have it? Well, my dad worked for Exxon. Is your dad still alive? No. You think he'd care if you'd sell it? No. Then why do you have it for? My dad had it. Okay. Well, you know, at least, I'm saying now is the time to at least get rid of the cobwebs around your stuff and look mm-hmm. at it. That's all I'm saying. I'm not telling anybody to sell. I'm not telling anybody to buy puts. I'm just saying right now, because I've always done it that way, is probably not the best excuse for a portfolio.
Okay, I understand that. But that's your business. I mean, that's how you make your living, is looking at that analysis and looking at the end of the day, did you gain money, did you lose money? If you gained, how much did you gain? If you lost, how much did you lose? We each have a finite amount of brain power and time during the day to focus on things like that. And so there's a reliance upon people who are investors, for people like you, to get the benefit of your expertise. Likewise, you would not go into court and litigate a multimillion dollar lawsuit.
Right. Oh, God, no. God, they throw me out in a second.
All right. So, I mean, my point is that the your analysis is going to be different than my analysis in what's going on in the market. And I mean, you can maybe laugh or say, you know, you've got a really good philosophy here is how you want to get to take that $1 million and make it $5 million, or you're really going by the seat of your pants, and that's pretty stupid because of what we're seeing in the market. You know, both may be valid statements, but it's based on your experience and your business as opposed to the time that I've got to invest. And you've said before, you know, is it because of laziness? Is it because of ignorance? Is it naivety? Is it that you've got a different philosophy and how it's going to work? But there's also just a finite amount of time that, you know, I couldn't do what you do because my expertise lies someplace else.
Well, there's a crossover, you know, Brendan, that I think people, me too. I mean, whenever I say people, I'm including myself in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a crossover of, I guess if I get a crummy parking ticket, I'll try and adjudicate it myself, and I'll fail miserably, right? I'll tell them, you know, I was really 80 feet from the fire hydrant, and the guy will write back, nah, we think you were 20, even though we can't prove it. By the way, pay up. And I'll lose, right? But I sit there and go, all right, it's $150. It's aggravating. It pisses me off. If the guy was in front of me, maybe I'd hit the gas and not the brake. I don't know, probably not, because I'm not that kind of guy. But if it was something serious, I'm not going to do it myself. Okay, I'm going to find you, or I'm going to find Lou. I mean, or somebody, Greg, who's going to help me out. Same thing when you have, if you throw $500 in a mutual fund when you're 22 years old, and you put $50 a month in there, I'm going to say congratulations. Someday go to 75, someday go to 100, and talk to me in 10 years. You know, one of the things somewhere up there where you got to worry about it. But we're talking people that are, there's millions, $1 million, $800,000 in somebody's account. They listen to people on TV telling them how all money managers do is steal your money. You can do this yourself. You don't have 95 commercials a day telling people you should go to court and be your own lawyer. I mean, people sort of believe this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you say to yourself, okay, I'm now $1 million investor or $2 million investor. When I do lectures, sometimes the hardest part to convince people are, you are an investor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, I got it in my 401k. I said, I didn't say you were a good one. whether it's under the mattress, whether it's in baseball cards, whether it's in old cars, whatever it is, you are, at least look at yourself in the mirror and say, I am an investor.
That's true.
Same way, you know, if you own your own home, it's worth $1 million. And you choose to stay there versus rent somewhere else. I am an investor in real estate. No, mm-hmm. It's my own home. It doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying?
No, I agree with you.
But now, for the first time in 9 years, we're having these discussions because really didn't. There's no other reason. Nowhere along the line, we had a couple of blips. We were down 10%, but this one looks more sinister, doesn't it, than the mm-hmm. couple we had before?
Mm-hmm.
The others lasted what, a week, and we pop right back up. This one not only looks like it might be longer than a week. Not so sure it's going to pop right back up. Of course, it might. You know, but. It just, I hate like hell to see people lose money that they don't have to lose, Brent. Because if you lose it, you lose more on the downside than you made on the upside. Because people have borrowed money out of their account. And by the way, God help you, if your first time in, you lost $100,000 this year, and now you can only take off $3,000 a year for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's serious stuff. I think it is. I mean, you know. When you see somebody at the table in Vegas next to you, it's up $5,000, and he won't leave till he's down $1,000. Same sort of thing. What are you doing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so what do you make of this? Let's shift gears to what your how does the state of Illinois and maybe a few other states get out from under this pension thing without going bust?
That's a very difficult answer because in light of what the Illinois Supreme Court has said as far as the diminution of any benefits, it really boxes all of the...
Why don't you summarize that thing? We've been hitting around at it. We never explained it.
All right. In 1970, the state of Illinois had a constitutional convention where they rewrote the Illinois Constitution. The old one was thrown out and the new one was drafted and approved by both the state legislature and the general public. one of the provisions in that constitution said that it protects those who receive pensions, government pensions. And it says that once granted, you cannot diminish the benefits conferred on pensioners in the state of Illinois. Now, that includes all government workers.
Even judges, by the way.
Even judges, yes. Even the Supreme Court judges who are ruling on this are included in this. For a number of years, and the reason that this was put in place, and by the way, one of the draftspeople at that 70 Constitution was a fellow from the southwest side of Chicago by the name of Michael Madigan.
So was Richie Daley.
So was Richie Daley.
So was Colerton.
There were quite a few of the people who were part of that Constitutional Convention in 1970.
The entire political generation was there.
The reason for this is that if you go back to the 20s and the 30s, there were pensions promised to a lot of government workers at the time, and all of a sudden, the governments would say, "Oops, sorry, we don't have enough money. You're screwed." And so, to protect the rights of many of the pensioners, there was a provision in the Illinois Constitution that says, once granted, those pensions cannot be diminished. Which means that, and then through the course of the 1990s, 20, 30 years after the convention, after the Constitution was adopted, the pension funds were pretty flush. And as late as, I want to say around maybe 2000, 2001, it was 85, 90% funded. What happened at the time, and this goes back to the time of Jim Edgar as governor.
Right, I got to back you up here. When you said the reason for it is there was a time when people didn't have any money and they just said, poosh, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
One of the interesting legal arguments that I've read against this thing in there, where, you know, it seems pretty plain. Obviously, it's very plain. You can't be diminished, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the legal arguments is, if you don't have any money, the state doesn't back anybody up.
That's
so,
right.
So it's actually, what's the legal term when a clause in there? It's like, you have a law that says no baby should be allowed to die.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, how do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
So when you write something that's just so stupid and unenforceable, in other words, how can you tell the city of Evergreen Park that you can't diminish a pension when there's five people left in Evergreen Park and there's 9,000 people getting a pension and the state's not going to back it up?
That's a completely different question that's unanswerable. And if everybody moves out of town, if everybody moves out of Evergreen Park, and yet you've got people who had retired 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, there's no money coming in from any revenue source. So, of course, they're not going to get paid. And who would you sue to get that money from? There's nobody that you can sue.
Well, okay, what I'm saying is the argument, and I don't know if it'll fly, but I'm asking you because you could be a judge, not me. The argument is, if it doesn't give anybody any sort of a backdrop or a backstop, it's a useless phrase. It's like you know, nobody should die.
Okay, I take your point, but that's not the question you asked me. Asked me about what is the diminution and what does it mean, and what it means.
Well, my question is, it still doesn't address.
You're talking about a practical question, which we can get to later on. But,
No. Stop. You're right. God, I love it when we do this. But when you said was, there's no money, so we need to put this in there. What I'm saying, it doesn't answer that. If there's no money.
No, I'm telling you from a historical perspective what happened.
All right, fair enough.
So the unions and people in government said, in order to protect us from not having this happen to us again, where we get screwed because we've been paying in, and the government says there's no more pensions, and so we're going to default on that. To protect them, it was put into the Constitution that there's no diminution. If something is promised to the government employees, then it cannot be diminished for as long as they're working for the government. All right?
Okay.
Stop. Full stop on that question.
Yeah,
on that
full
point.
Stop.
Okay? After the Constitution was put in place, funding was made for 30, 35 years, and the pension fund was flush. It was at 85, 90%. And
this probably is till early 90s.
Well, probably mid to late 90s, maybe even 2000. And then, but at the same time, there was a lot of money in the pension funds, and things were getting a little bit tight. So the state legislature had a couple of options. as revenues needed to be generated. One was to raise taxes, whether it's income tax or property tax or what have you, to fill the coffers. The second thing was to say, you know, our pension funds are pretty flush. It's not going to harm us that much if we don't make a pension payment this year and take the money, take the $5 million we would put into the pension fund and use that to fund highways or fund, you know, something else in the state government. So we'll give a moratorium to the pension fund's payments, and we'll have a gradual ramp up. We won't have to make full payments, and the money we save by not putting it into the pension fund, we'll use for other purposes. All right, one-time deal. You know, it's you can do that. You can do that with your home budget,
right,
too.
Well, legal question, Judge. Somebody who is not involved, but one of our contributors to the show, Robin, was on the Pullman Pension Board.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and one of the reasons for a lot of the takeovers back in the 70s and 80s was that those particular funds were flush, and that's why, you know, UAL Inc. took over United Airlines. Why, in the ERISA laws, the federal ERISA laws, for people who are managing these, quote, pensions, did not allow you, if you're overfunded, to take money out or not make the contribution.
Yeah, that's private pensions, not the government pensions. And the ramp-up under Edgar was done with the approval of the Illinois legislature,
okay,
House and Senate.
All right, so my simple question is, how is a state not susceptible to federal pension?
Because the federal rules go to private company pensions, not to government pensions.
So at one time, the federal government put through a law that made sense. The state didn't have to abide by it.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. That's good.
Look, the same thing is true. If you look at the perks in Congress and in the state legislatures for, I mean, take health care insurance. Look at the Cadillac plans that cover congressmen and their staffs compared to what most people in this country have to purchase for health care insurance.
Not sure I want to do that.
Regardless of your feeling on Obamacare.
Would it piss me off if I looked at it?
Yes, it would.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're saying this is what you should abide by, but for us, it's different because we're making the rules. Remember the point I made before, that if you're the one making the rules or you're the one who can draft things to allow you to benefit, that's not a fair system.
Well, no.
And the same thing happened in the Illinois pension funds when you're thinking about the fact that this ramp-up money was taken out rather than put into the pension funds. And then the second year came, and they said, well, you know, we're still pretty good. We're not at 92 anymore. We're at 90, but we're still pretty good. So then the third year, it's, you know, we're at 88. That's still pretty good. But eventually, you pay a price. And, of course, with the downturn in the market 10 years ago, everything really tanked. And so the what are you going to do about it now? How are you going to make up for those losses? It's not just the losses in the market, but it's the losses for the investments on what you did not put into it to keep the pension funds flush.
Well, yeah. SP Futures up 275. We have Mr. David Animal. We come back.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. It's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so.
I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howley. He's Mr. Brendan Cornell. We have Mr. David Andelman as well. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up. Oh, my God, 275. We're down 20 last night. David will let us know exactly where we were down low because I was watching the Bears. Dow futures up 38, NASDAQ futures up 27. Oil not only down 79 cents, it was doing worse than that. 10-year yield 2.86, back under 3% in the last couple days. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 49. FTSE up 22 as some court now says that they don't have to do Brexit if they don't want to, which is weird. CAC around down 20. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 459, it's 2%. Shanghai down 21.8%. Hang Seng down 311, 1.2%. Like I said, we've got oil down 79 cents. Brent down 66. That spread is $9.18. Natural gas 454. RBOB gas 146. We got gold now down 290. Silver down 9 cents. Manny, we got Forest Trevi Weather Sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still looking pretty good, and now the fog has cleared in the area, so lots of sunshine and clear skies. And no major accidents to report on the Edens or Kennedy. Same with the Eisenhower, Stevenson, Dan Ryan, I-57, Bishop Ford, all looking good. One significant crash in the area is in the Western Burbs, Butterfield Road at Trans Am Plaza. There is an accident causing some delays. But as far as the expressways are concerned, we're looking good. We do have a crash on the Stevenson exit ramp, though, southbound just before Pulaski Road. And this is increasing some travel times as folks navigate around that. Lakeshore Drive to the Tri-State up to 31 minutes, I-355 to 41 minutes, but that's still below normal for a Monday morning. So off to a good start today. Weather today, like I mentioned, lots of sunshine, and we warm up a few degrees. We'll reach a high of 34. Right now it's crystal clear and 22 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 72. Right now it's mostly clear and 46. In sports, Bears 9-4 on the year after a dominating 15-6 win last night. The Rams, best offense in the NFL, or at least best in the NFC, averaged 35 points per game, only managed 6, a couple of field goals. Bears offense did just enough. Trubisky threw for 1 touchdown and 3 interceptions. Jordan Howard played well, though, 19 carries for 101 yards. Bears now 2 games up on the Vikings. Vikings play tonight. If they lose, Bears would be 2.5 up with 3 to play, pretty much locking up the NFC North. Blackhawks dropped their 7th straight. They lost to Montreal 3-2 last night. And as we touched on a bit earlier in Hour 1, a couple of former Chicago All-Stars are making the Baseball Hall of Fame. Harold Baines, longtime White Sox, and Lee Smith, longtime Cubs closer, both got in.
Chief. Did you see that the kicker for the Rams doinked a field goal attempt last night?
I did.
And Parkey missed one, too.
And then Parkey missed one after he hadn't missed a single kick since that game where he clanked four off the uprights. He'd been perfect.
Mm-hmm.
He drilled his first one last night down the middle, his first two, actually.
First two.
And then, then he missed that one. And that appeared to be a big miss at the time.
Yeah, it was.
It would have made it a two-touchdown game.
Yep.
But the Rams' offense just couldn't get anything going, so it didn't matter.
I thought that guy was in, and all of a sudden it just wavered at the last minute and clunked.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Not just hit and went through anyway. It just clunked.
Yeah.
It was not good offense of or special teams by either team last night as far as putting points on the board.
Nope.
Both kickers missed field goals. Both quarterbacks were horrendous. We had receivers that were, not running great routes at times. It was an ugly game.
The defensive backs made better catches than the offensive receivers did.
David, how are you?
Pretty good, pretty good.
So what's with the big whale here? Is this, we coming back all the way?
All the way? Yeah, sometime. Hope we live to see it.
Yeah.
No, who knows? I mean, the market, I mean, you're better, you have forgotten probably more fundamentals than I know, but to me, the biggest things were midterm elections, the Fed, and trade. And I'm not saying everything went exactly as what the market would like, but I don't think the midterm elections hurt much of anything. And the Fed seems to have backed off at least a little bit. I mean, they probably will raise in December, but then, probably go a little easier next year. And the trade, I don't know what folks were expecting or weren't expecting, but at least the tariffs weren't raised, and there's a framework, and they're literally talking today. So, I mean, that went as well as could be expected. The Christmas buying season, I think, is doing okay. Maybe the retailers overstocked and have inventories as they tried to get ahead of some of the tariffs, so margins might be squeezed a little bit. But in general, I think it's going well. So from the story standpoint, I think everything's pretty good other than, politics, the special counsel and this and that and the other and Trump and, but I think the economic and corporate news is decent, and yet all the good news is sold every rally.
I'm not so sure how good the, when you start pinning in the current economy's hopes on Christmas shopping, investment numbers seem down, David.
Investment numbers? What
I'm saying, like,
numbers?
Some of the corporate investment number. I think this GM thing is a big. Something's weird when these guys do 17 million cars and still have to close two or three plants. I mean,
the cars aren't selling. SUVs, they can't get enough. I mean, we know that.
So why isn't somebody turning a car plant into an SUV plant?
Because they already have those.
All right. What I'm saying is,
I mean, if you invest 2.5 years ago in Ohio, they invested huge in Chevy Cruze plant. It's been a dog.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying as a car. I've never driven it, but it's not selling. So if you invest and you give it 2.5 years and it doesn't happen, what are you going to do? Take everything from, North Carolina and bring it to Ohio? Just because.
Well, what I'm saying is, if you do the numbers, the top line stays the same, you would think that someplace you're busting out of an SUV plant, another place you're shorting a car plant, you might want to move one to the other, you would think.
Well, I would hope, and I would agree, except that they still want to take what they can as far as cars and, produce them as cheaply as possible. So Trump or no Trump, they want to take it to Mexico. I don't love that, and I agree with you, but that's, they have to make a decision that's good for them, for their bottom line, and for their shareholders. Whether it's wonderful for workers or not, I'm not, saying that's a wonderful thing to do, or I do feel badly for, those workers who face, being out of a job. But hey, if you were CEO of the company and pulling the reins, what would you do?
Well, I think we've had some interesting, I guess I'll go back in history in this one. You look at the company that's now being taken under Sears. When people lose sight of their workers also being their customers, I think you have bad outcomes.
I agree.
And wasn't Henry Ford who said, I have to price a car so my workers can afford it?
No, I agree. I agree with that.
So when you have a system that if you bring something to Mexico to make it cheaper for you, yet if everybody did the same thing, there wouldn't be anybody here to buy any one of your cars.
Right. No, you know, and that's the thing. Where's the line drawn, or where does efficiency and bottom line cross from what's good for society, good for the economy, good for the American public, and, you know, you just end up squeezing yourself? It's a tough call.
Well, I would hope that, and this is what Carl always is ranting and raving about, Brendan, is I would hope that we're not moving to Mexico just so we can pollute the air, because guess what? We breathe the same air. We're not getting anything there. You know, the big joke when the...
That's why we need a wall, to stop the air from coming over.
Yeah. Well, the big joke when...
Maybe we need a big net.
Yes.
Yeah, well, wasn't the big joke...
A big balloon to trap the air.
That's big balloon, so we don't let the air in here.
That's
right. Wasn't the joke when NAFTA was first signed that, well, you can't pollute the Rio Grande on this side, you can pour it in from the other side, but it won't go across the river? Well, it's time to think about this stuff, and we're not, somehow I appreciate, and I've said this a million times, the president opening up a lot of these issues. But when you open them up without having them thought about, when I was chairman of, committees, and you know, Brendan's been involved with a lot of this stuff. If you open up a topic, if you don't at least have some idea where you want the solution to go, it's kind of a bad day usually, or a bad week.
I think the talk and the tweets and everything else, you know, you point for 2 years to market and investors and people have made, you know, trillions, and it's me, and I'm the best, and market this, market that, market this, market that. You come out of a meeting where, you know, you have some hopes, and, oh, it's 90 days, we don't know when, you know, is it January 1st, is it February 1st, is it March 1st, you know, when does the 90 days begin, this, that, the other. And then, you know, in a day, I'm a tariff man. I mean, it's stupid.
Yeah.
It's just dumb. You know, you can't have it both ways where you point to the market and then because of a silly tweet, to an extent, I'm not saying it was the reason the market went down, but, you know, it changes attitudes and people flee.
Well, I don't... are we sure that these guys know that it's our people who are paying them the tariffs?
You know, there was some guy. Was it Lighthizer? I can't remember. There was somebody who sounded sensible, and I forget, Face the Nation or Meet the Press. It wasn't, you know, just a talking head. Somebody who sounded like they were, you know, somebody with some knowledge, and said that in actuality, that a fair portion of the tariffs have actually been paid by China to the U.S. Treasury. I really find that hard to believe.
How could that be even remotely possible?
I don't know the answer.
Now, I bet we can find a product or two that there's perfect substitutes both here in Korea and other places that in order to stay competitive on this end, the Chinese have had to eat the entire tariff.
Right.
But it's still paid on this end.
Right.
what I say by that is, let's walk it through. Let's not be...
Yeah, they're not sending a check.
No, but let's not be like the president. If something comes over, say a shot glass for IKEA, that everybody gets paid $1 for, right? You put a 20% tariff on it, and IKEA sells them for $2. probably sell them for more, but say they sell them for $2. If IKEA could still buy those things for $1 at five other places, if the Chinese company selling the shot glasses wants to maintain their market share, they're gonna have to drop their price, not to 80 cents, but whatever $1 divided by 120 is.
Right.
So say 82 cents.
83 cents.
83 cents. So what happens is when the thing gets to the border here, you get the bill of lading. Here's 1,000 shot glasses, 83 cents a pop. Somebody's going to demand a tariff of the person on this end of 20%.
Right.
The person here in this country writes that check to the U.S. government. Not in China. But China has made it so that the guy here can write the check to the U.S. government.
Because he's lowered the price.
Because he's lowered the price and it still ends up to be a buck. But I'm going to say that out of 10,000 things we buy from China, on a lot more, counselor, how am I going with this one? I'm going to say out of the 10,000, there's maybe 100 that are perfectly competitive other places. So if China is the sole supplier of shot glasses, I'm going to say they might, and there's 20 cents tariff on a thing, I bet they drop their price 2 cents. IKEA drops their price 5 cents, and the price goes from $2 to $2.13.
Right.
But every single product has a different formula. Now the question is, do these people understand that as well as we do? And I hope they do. I don't know if they do or not. Trump's tweets seem to indicate...
Yeah, billions are pouring into the U.S. Treasury coffers.
From China.
From China.
From China. And I'm going to say not one Chinese person has written a check yet.
Well, that we know. Has the government written one check? I doubt it.
Yeah, I mean... Why would they? Unless they are sending a check to the factory over there saying, lower the prices, we'll help you out. That could be.
Maybe.
Maybe.
By the way, we have a listener that has a couple of questions. I don't know if these are ETFs or what for David, so you'll have to look these up. But he says, what's David's assessments of HYG and JNK? That's from Michael.
Well, HYG is the that's the high yield. That's the high yield.
Junk bond thing?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's trending towards the lows. I mean, supposedly, purportedly, from the news standpoint, and again, I'm not a, you know, debt fundamentalist, but supposedly, you know, as rates presumably go up, even if they're at a slower rate, you know, the amount of debt and high-yield corporate bonds, which is what this ETF is, you know, are under pressure. The chart looks pretty terrible. We closed at 82.83. The low of this cycle is 82.70, so we're like 13 cents off of that. I certainly would not want to pick a bottom. I wouldn't sell it. It's well below its, you know, 200-day moving averages and 50-day moving averages. Up around 84, 84.20, I'd be a seller. Here, I would just do nothing. I would not buy it. What's the other one, JNK?
Yes.
That's got to be junk bonds.
Yeah, very similar. This is the Barclays High Yield Bond Fund. Almost an identical pattern, really. The low is 34, I mean, the last was 34.45, and the cycle low was 34.36, so in that case, we're a nickel off. And same situation. I would not pick a bottom in a, you know, higher interest rate environment and larger supply. But I wouldn't sell it unless it got back probably to 35.50. You know, up between 35 and 35.50, between the 50-day and 200-day moving averages. I wouldn't sell it either. So I just, if you're long, hold on. If you're not long, don't get long. If you're short, stay short.
From an investment standpoint, and as an investor, Brendan, sort of in keeping with that question, we've got Treasury rates virtually over 2% the whole way with a very flat curve, right, David?
Yeah.
So we were getting 2.4 for 6 months. Do you think we're ever going back? I mean, people have this opinion that we can go back to 0.5% or something, and Europe can go back to negative. I don't know that junk ever goes back to 5.5-6%, David. It was so irrational to start with there. I don't know that we can retrace that. That we can, we clearly can go from 2.5 in the Treasury back to 2 or 1.5. I don't know that we're going back to half. No. I wonder if that was a one-time phenomenon. I think before you invest in J&K or this other stuff, I think you have to have a serious look at yourself in front of a mirror and say, these are not investment-grade bonds. I mean, the idea is 10% of these companies or 5% are liable to go out. Is 6% enough or 6.5%? And the answer to me is no.
Yeah, I mean, you got yield on the J&K at 5.72, which, you know, is a big number, but nevertheless, it's, you know, it's not called junk because it's high quality. And the HYG is a little lower, 5.39. I know the HYG has a bunch of, you know, energy issues in there. And so maybe it's, and that's why the yield is probably less. I mean, if you put a gun to my head and said, you're going to be in one, do it. I suppose I'd go to HYG before J&K, but as I said, I personally wouldn't want to be in any of them.
I got a question for both of you guys. Right now, we're getting pretty close to the point where there's going to be an inverted yield curve with the 2-year versus the 5-year, the 10-year. How do you think that, do you think that's going to happen soon? And how do you think that's going to play out and affect the market?
Who are you asking?
David, fire away. Your voice is better than mine.
I think that it likely will happen. I don't think it'll be a lasting phenomena. In probably 75% of the cases that have been cited on the tube, you know, it's led to a recession, but not for 18 to 24 months out. This time might be different because we're coming from such a low level. Maybe if it happened and stayed happened. Typically, I think you have to really get the recession. You have to be 2 quarters inverted.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly don't think that's going to happen. I think the economy will slow and come in, but I wouldn't be shocked to see a week, a month, even a quarter, where it stays inverted, and then it snaps back. I think the economy is decent.
And
I think the one thing that everyone forgets is the old law of large numbers. You know, 2% today, you know, on the economy is maybe equivalent to 2.4% 10 years ago.
And do you think if there is an inverted yield curve in order to stave off recession, that there will be no more Fed rate hikes?
Yeah, I think that's, or, you know, 1 instead of 4, something like that, depending on wages. And I think, you know, they're thinking, oh, well, wage growth, well, hey, that's desirable. You know, that doesn't mean necessarily that inflation's coming back. But, you know, and maybe the inflation, the real inflation, not the stated inflation, is there, and it's what it is, and we cope with it. And you need some more wages to cope with it. And I think it's okay. I'm not a Fed guy. I'm not a fundamentalist. But I don't think that this is devastation.
Okay.
Chief?
I'm gonna say that I think the whole thing is somewhat messed up. But what David just said is a very accurate description of what is, quote, going on right now. And I can see it going sort of a different way. The inflation numbers you're picking up on, depending on who you talk to, let me go back to the beginning. Your real rate of interest, the nominal rate of interest that you see, okay, say that the 10-year is 4%. It should be a real rate of interest plus people's expectation for inflation over the 10 years. So if you think inflation is going to be 2%, and the real rate of interest is 2, then what you're really saying is I'm getting 2% interest, but at the end of 10 years, they're compensating me for the fact that my dollars have gone down 2% a year for 10 years by buying power, correct? I mean, that's the original, you know, that's the formula, right, David, that now seems to have been, you know, skewered a little bit, shall we say. But the inflation that we see is not the general inflation that was during the 70s or whatever. You have a, if you look at any kind of chart, maybe we'll do this next Monday. I have some statistics since I'm cleaning the place. It might not look like it, but some of the stuff where you'll see over a 10-year period, your inflation rate was 300% or over a 20 or 30-year period. Yet you'll see pockets like Medicare is up 2,000%, or college tuition's up 2,000%. Somehow or another, massive chunks have managed to get into the system that, like David says, are not going to change. And this is what Carl Denninger continues to rant about every time we have him on, and I wish people would maybe listen more like people from Washington, because unless you can take, nobody is talking about that General Motors is leaving because it's $2,000 a month for medical care here. It has nothing to do with the 30 hours per car. Because if you look at it from the way I look at it, why would anybody move a factory to Mexico for essentially $500 a car when it has to cost $500 to ship it back here? Yeah, we're not accounting for the medical stuff. And by the way, the guy you're buying some piece from down in Mexico, he doesn't have to do it either. We've let these things overwhelm the CPI to the point where the CPI is useless. Somebody who's making $50,000 a year versus $20,000 a year in 1977, some of the numbers I've been dragging up the last week, he's nowhere near in the same position as the guy making $20,000 in 1977. But these statistics have run over the guy. I mean, just absolutely run over him. I mean, a car that was $4,500 in 1977 is $31,000 now. And he's up, his salary is up, what do you think, David, 2 times, 2.5 times?
At most.
It's probably, the guys...
If you take the broad cross-section, the lower third, I doubt it's that. The upper two-thirds, probably a little bit more.
Well, the list I had, you know, I'm surprised. Guess where all this stuff came from, Brennan? It's a University of Missouri, of all places. They had electricians and those guys making, in July of 1977, are making like $11 an hour, $12 an hour. And I'm saying right now they're making, what do they make, 35, David, maybe?
Yeah.
All right, so these are in factories. So say 35.
That's 200% up.
Yeah, 200% up. So, but your automobiles are, this is in 77. Your hospitalization's got to be up, what, 2,000%. Notre Dame education's $4,000 to $70,000. And a car is $4,500 to $31,000. So you're not even beginning to get those chunks. You're never going to get the CPI in going. But now going forward, even if the healthcare goes 2% a year from now for the next 10 years, and, quote, the bonds you're seeing are correct, that they should be 3%, which is what they are, your real rate of interest is, say, 1 because the Fed's keeping it down. You're still not, in terms of your society, catching up at all, are you, David?
No.
And that's therein lies the rub. We've totally lost track of how these numbers interact with every man.
Yeah, the numbers are terrible.
I'm going to give you an example real quick. We don't have like 45 seconds. If I drop a $1,000 fee for walking out your front door on you, Brendan, of your condo?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, it's not in the CPI, so it doesn't count. But now if we put it in CPI and it doesn't go up next year, the inflation on that is 0. So now it's into your cost of living, but it wasn't counted when it first put in, and now it's 0. We've seen a lot of that. And you'll never catch up. And it's not in your 10-year bond yield or anything like that. S&P futures up 275. Be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.